This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 7:15 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Shamila. Up next, sugar daddy sites are in the news once more. This was after a survey, and I'm using the word quite loosely, released by a US-based site showed that Malaysia had the third highest number of, and I'm only going to say this once, sugar babies in Asia. So we want to take a look at the attention the story is gaining and also examine the fact that now calls... So we want to talk about, I think, why this is happening in the first place, right? Like, what are the factors that are present in the country, in the pressures of being a young person living here in general, that has resulted in the rise of this, but also to talk about the calls for banning that have now emerged.
Yeah. So, again, I really hate a lot of these terms that we are going to have to use, but just to define what this means, right? So sugar dating refers to a transactional dating practice, really, that is characterized by an older, wealthier person and a younger person who needs financial assistance in some way, coming together in quote unquote, a mutually beneficial relationship. In this case, the sugar baby is the younger person, while the older person or the older wealthier person really is referred to as the sugar daddy or the sugar mama. None of those are things I really want to say.
I wanted to sub out sugar parent, but it didn't sound any better.
No.
So this is what we're left with. So I think the thing that is causing the deepest controversy, firstly, is the fact that survey results claim that Malaysia has the third highest number of sugar daddies in Asia, and that's at 42,500. We are behind India and Indonesia. And then subsequently, a local sugar dating platform went and released its own unverified infographics, which implied that many college students, again, according to ranking, were choosing to go into this style of dating. And I think this has prompted just a larger conversation around what this means, because the way that it's often couched is that, this is an empowering way. This is not, this is an empowering way for everybody who, you know, who are both adults to essentially get what they want out of a relationship. It is ostensibly very clear. But I think as with anything else that involves personal relationships and that involves the handling of money, the boundaries and lines of power and abuse become very unclear.
Yes, and also because a lot of this ends up being at the purview of a fairly closed system, right? This is an app, and let's not forget that this information, it was shared as a publicity, as the local platform shared this information as a publicity measure to say, hey, you know, people are choosing this lifestyle. People are empowered by being able to do this. And there has been a fair amount of pushback to this. They've been criticized for promoting this as a lifestyle, yeah, but in reality, actually exploiting women who are in need of financial aid. That's not something that we want to downplay here. The fact that, you know, it does, these are people who I think typically turn to these things because they need money in some form or another, but this also leaves them open to being abused. Some of the criticism. So the Sunway Group has issued a statement condemning the website and for, I'm quoting here, casting aspersions on morality and decency of their students. The Higher Education Ministry has said that they're going to investigate these claims. The police have opened an investigation report. And just yesterday, I believe, the Deputy Minister of Religious Affairs in the Prime Minister's Department, Dato' Ahmad Marzuk Shari, is calling for the app to be blocked because it encourages people to violate laws, including Sharia laws. And just to bring it all back to young people, a group of Malaysian youth NGOs also released a joint statement today calling for a ban on these types of apps or platforms, as well as for the government to actually look into why young people might be turning to them.
So that's what we want to talk about now, right? The root causes for why it is that, if the data is to be believed, that many Malaysians are opting for this style, this more transactional platform, this more transactional relationship, and also in some cases, the possibilities of abuse, the possibilities of misuse, and the banning. So let us know what you think. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, joining us on the line is Sharon Bong, Associate Professor of Gender Studies. Sharon, good to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for asking me.
So, first and foremost, what do you make of the attention that the story has been getting and the kinds of conversation that it's generated?
I'm generally surprised by the attention the issue of sugar daddies and sugar babies is getting, as it's not a new issue. One of the main sugar daddy sites was created way back in 2006, I think. The owner of this site, a self-professed sugar daddy, ended up marrying his sugar baby. The issue gained a lot of traction from multiple stakeholders, as we know, and this includes various government ministries, university spokespersons, including women's NGOs, in the opening days of the Year of the Ox. And of course, Twitter chatter has also added to the mix, bringing in more voices with diverse and often contrasting opinions and gender ideologies.
So the data that was released by this particular local platform suggests that many university students are registered sugar babies. How accurate do you think this is?
I should quickly add that I'm not in a position to comment on the accuracy of this data without more in-depth research. And there are or should be privacy protection to get through in assessing such data. I can, however, understand how troubling the data is, especially to the universities in question. My question is whether or not applicants on these sites had given their prior permission to have private details, for instance, their university affiliation, disclosed in public in this manner that has, of course, been subsequently blasted in the various social media platforms. There might be untoward stigmatization against them. And perhaps, as you've mentioned, this is no more than a publicity stunt to garner more attention to these dating or hookup sites.
So something that's come up, I think, is this idea of understand a little bit more the root causes of why it is that this is on the rise. So our next question is focused on what are some of the reasons why people might sign up to do this on both sides of the equation?
First-hand accounts work best in answering this question, so many interviewing, you know, the stakeholders directly involved. But I guess on the part of the larger female base of sugar babies, reasons gleaned from their personal testimonies, these have been advertised on these social media platforms, include companionship with sex thrown in or not, a certain lifestyle, access to professional networks, survival in meeting expensive tuition fees, particularly the time of COVID-19, or struggling to make ends meet in the case of single mothers, etc. The profile of those who sign up, in contrast to what is often advertised, truly varies, so there's no single stereotype. On the part of the sugar daddies whose ages are getting younger, that is, successful men in their 30s, even 20s, reasons include companionship with sex thrown in or not. I'm sure there are other reasons, but further research is needed.
Now, the one thing that struck out for a lot of people is the fact that the marketing for these sugar dating websites have predominantly been about how these arrangements can be empowering and that it's a path to financial freedom and that the woman can set her terms. What do you make of this sort of messaging?
I reckon for some women and men, there are also male sugar babies and sugar mummies. This would hold true. Some of the sugar babies make a distinction between such transactional relationships and sex work. Even drawing from schools of feminist thought, there are at least two contrasting opinions, those for and against issues as diverse as sex work, pornography, abortion, etc. Where one feels empowered, there is usually informed consent involved. This applies to those above 16 years of age, of course, in the context of Malaysia, or it constitutes statutory rape. This could mean that one is in a position to dictate terms of engagement, but that is, of course, not everyone's story or experience.
And if you could paint a picture for us, what are some of the actual power dynamics that the situation does involve?
More in-depth research, I know I keep saying this, would be needed to better understand these power dynamics, both on the part of sugar daddies and sugar babies. On the one hand, sugar babies are not without power in all circumstances. It would be misleading to assume that sugar babies are always, at all times, disadvantaged and likely to be victimized. On the other hand, as the wealth disparity is there, and usually held by men, the sugar daddies, the scenario at the outset is a non-level playing field. And coupled with harmful gender ideologies where women, especially young women's bodily integrity, is not respected, this could lead to gender-based discrimination and violence.
So, speaking about those risks particularly, you know, one of the criticisms that has been raised is this issue of exploitation, especially of young women when they sign up. What are these risks that we're talking about?
Okay, I referred to this in my previous response. The risk of exploitation of young women and men who sign up is a clear and present risk given the inequalities, at least if one measures inequalities in terms of financial wealth and connections that are present at the outset of such transactional relationships. The experience of gender-based discrimination and gender-based violence would further and adversely impact one's mental health and overall well-being. So these are some of the major risks involved.
So we have heard the Deputy Minister for Religious Affairs recently calling for the app to be blocked. What are your thoughts on this?
I'd like to offer a quote from a movie, one of my favourite, Bridge of Spies. The lead character says on more than one occasion, "Would it help?" A parallel move comes to mind, blocking comprehensive sexuality education in schools based on the mindset that it would only promote sexual relations among teenagers and young people. So the point is, these are already happening and giving rise to phenomena such as baby dumping, as we all know. What I feel would be more helpful would be to move away from the immorality discourse to a discourse on empowerment. What we should do, and to do quite urgently, is to empower young people with enough sexuality education and the kind that is comprehensive, so that they have a healthy notion of their own bodily integrity and, by extension, the bodily integrity of others.
Sharon, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Most welcome.
That was Sharon Bong, Associate Professor of Gender Studies, speaking about the recent controversies surrounding sugar dating platforms in Malaysia. Because according to, again, all this is unverified. We really do have to say that. It's being released by sugar dating platforms who have you can hardly call it a vested interest. They just have an open interest in showcasing this data. But at least according to an American platform, Malaysia has the third highest number of sugar daddies here on the continent of Asia. So we want to know, what are your thoughts on this? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.